We've now had six Biz News conferences, BNC 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the most recent in March, middle of March in Hermanus, where we had 500 delegates and 28 keynote speakers. Amongst them, Gigi Alcock, who's going to be coming with us to London. We are taking the Biz News conference concept to the South African community in London. Our tribe members are all over the world, but many of them in London. And he'll be one of the other seven keynote speakers is my old friend and the founder of AltVest, Warren Wheatley. And I've asked the two of them because the concept that they're talking about is very aligned to just join me today and have a little chat about what the audience in London can get to see. And guys, you don't really need an introduction to the Biz News community, but I think you're going to be blown away by the people who will be in the audience in London. We've got the top team of Nedbank London, Stonehage, which is one of the big asset private wealth companies, Vitality, certainly the most successful international company from a South African business. It's a big offshoot of Discovery. Lord Peter Hain will be there, two other lords as well. What I found quite funny was that Peter Hain was the anti-apartheid activist for the Springbok rugby tour in which Tommy Bedford, one of my boyhood heroes, was the vice captain. And it's probably before your time. But both of those guys are going to be in the audience, Peter Hain and Tommy Bedford. So this is going to be quite an event, plus many others. Our partners from the Financial Times have got a big delegation there as well. But you two guys are going to be on the stage. You're going to be talking to a different community, the international community, 3 days before they go to vote, 2 weeks before we go to vote here in South Africa. And Gigi, our community knows you well, but what are you going to be telling them over there?
Thanks, Alec. Yeah, so I'm going to obviously talk my area of speciality, which is informal economy. But I think importantly, we're so surrounded by bad news, and yet there's such a really powerful story to tell about the gassipreneurs and that part of the economy. And a part of it is also how it creates opportunity for the formal economy. I'm at the Biz News conference, the CEO of Capitec said, you know, they'd been doing some work with me, and they've recognized that the massive opportunity and growth for them is in what they call the emerging economy, you know. And so I think that part of what I'll be talking to is just what are the opportunities, and just looking at that, even from a business perspective. You know, there's two sides to this coin. One is to say, wow, look at these amazing entrepreneurs and what help they need. And the other side of the coin is, what are the massive opportunities represented by the space and the economic activity happening there? The other thing I think is that, you know, everyone's kind of looking at the election as if like that's the end of the road. And I think very importantly, the so what afterwards, you know, we need to carry on building our economy and getting our country in order. And so part of what I'm talking to is that this is the space that represents a lot of the hope and the opportunity to build going forward. And I think that you know, business by its nature, it needs optimism and hope and a sense of the future. I do a lot of talking around what are trends in this kind of space. So part of it will be, you know, what is happening? What are the trends in the next few months, few years, and so on?
You're also a director of AltVest, and I'm really excited that Warren is coming over to tell us about the AltVest story, because it is a way into the informal market in many ways, and an opportunity. Warren, maybe you can just tell us a bit about the story you're going to be sharing with our London tribe, but an opportunity to make a difference if you're sitting far away as an expat.
So, Alec, my message is going to be building on Gigi's, because I finally have reliable, verifiable data that proves categorically that SA has absolutely resilient entrepreneurs, and that whatever the outcome of this election, that's unlikely to deter them in their efforts, and that they are deserving of adoration from capital markets and not this absolute exclusion that they've suffered all these years. So I finally, from an AltVest perspective, have really good tangible news to share with the business community who have supported us from day one. We've deployed over 150 million in capital to around about 20 or so entrepreneurs. They've been responsible with our capital. They've added returns to it, and they've returned it to us. You know, there's the old adage in asset management that it's not return on capital, but more return of your capital. That's important. And that has happened, and it's going to continue to happen. And the message I'm saying is that, you know, while South Africa doesn't necessarily meet the criteria of, you know, the Moody's or Standard & Poor's and that sort of thing, we actually have a way and the mechanisms and the know-how to deploy capital into the nooks and crevices of the country, where not only will you get your capital back, but with a healthy return as well. And in doing all of that, increasing our ability to create impact, create jobs, and to do all the other wonderful things capital is capable of if we let it run its natural course. We've got fantastic stats. We've saved over 170 jobs. So our loans, our capital has prevented three or four businesses from closing. We've initiated projects where over 158 jobs were created as a result of our initiatives. And this is just a small little company in a small enclave in Sandton doing this, and we can do more if we have the support of big international investors. And so that's my message.
So interesting, because Andrew Middleton will also be with us, and he's doing something similar in the electricity area. And I see the news today that his company, Go Solar, has now got Patrice Motsepe as a backer, and they're going to expand $250 million that they're going to be putting into the solar market. So it just shows these initiatives that entrepreneurs like you are doing can very quickly gather momentum. But it's interesting to me that the news flow, if you like, offshore is very much, South Africa's in trouble and they got a terrible election coming and it could be worse than it is at the moment. And the middle class is state-proofing themselves to make sure they've got private schools, private security, private everything. Whereas in the informal market, none of this is landing and things are going ahead. And if you, Gigi, if you were to take the data that is sent around the world on unemployment and so on about South Africa, which excludes the informal market, you'd be splitting your wrists or certainly wouldn't be coming along to even think of what this country has to offer.
Yeah, you know, Alec, my argument is that you can't just look at formal employment, in essence, payslip employment, so someone with a payslip. Outside of that, there's a huge body of people who are earning non-payslip incomes as well as a range of other incomes. I will be talking to this, but, you know, everything from the backroom rental sector is a massive 20 billion rand a year sector, and that's passive incomes by the homeowners, and we don't, again, you know, we don't measure that. And then those people may be earning a really good income from their home, but they we measure them as unemployed. And the reality is, you know, there's a lot less unemployment out there. My argument is it's closer to 12%, not the 32-odd% that is mentioned. And I mean, we see this across, you know, a range of different formal businesses who operating in the sector who still continuing to do very well despite this. And how is that possible unless there are higher incomes? My argument is that there's about 750 billion rand conservatively in turnover happening in this sector, literally across every sector, from beauty to auto sector to home construction, retail, and so on and so forth. So, you know, the tragedy is we have this negative image because we're only looking, you know, at one thing, which is that pay slip income in terms of employment. The other thing is that, you know, the middle classes, I would say the higher middle classes are state-proofing themselves, but the lower middle classes and the township sector also state-proofing themselves. You know, they're getting on with life and not relying that much on many services. And we've just seen it with load shedding. It's had a big impact on a lot of businesses in that space, but many of them have been incredibly resilient and found ways to survive and carry on with their businesses. And that's a story we should actually be telling. You know, we're often talking to the minority. You know, only according to stats, they say only 10% of households in South Africa are living on the breadline. Now, you know, maybe 10% is terrible, but it's not 90%. And yet the headlines will talk to that figure. And there's a lot of things where we do talk to the lowest common denominator. You know, it bleeds, it leads. I'm reading a remarkable book at the moment called Humankind, A Hopeful History, and talks to how media throughout the ages has presented this incredibly negative image, and that negative image has then shaped policy and shaped certain decisions. And if we can put this more positive thing on, then it will shape decisions in a different direction, in my mind.
The late Daniel Kahneman, in his wonderful book, Thinking Fast and Slow, or Thinking Slow and Fast, kind of which way around, uses the example of human beings being hardwired for receptive nine times more for bad news than good news. And I guess if you're now in the business of news, what are you going to be providing people with if you get nine times the bag on your back for the bad news than the good news? And sometimes I think, Warren, that people internationally or people offshore must think that we're nuts here in South Africa. Why stay here if you read the headlines and believe it? And yet we love it. I mean, I couldn't think of living anywhere else in the world than in the country that I live in, potholes and all. And yet there is a misperception. And yet you, from your side, Warren, have managed to at least start opening the door to the very conservative, formal, institutional sector to start realizing that there is an opportunity to invest in the informal, smaller market.
So, Eric, the last 6 months have been incredible for me, because my days has been spent having positive conversations with three or four amazing entrepreneurs per day, every day. You can't help but feel positive about life, about the country, and about everyone's collective future when that is your day, every single day. And the only feeling I have is that I'm under-resourced to solve the problem meaningfully. And when you gave me the opportunity to potentially address that lack of resources by addressing a community that is, you know, arguably over-resourced, though they probably won't admit it, but there's more access to capacity across the pond. So I'm jumping at the opportunity to fill my toolbox up with more tools to help the guys I'm meeting, guys and girls, actually, that I'm meeting every single day. It's incredibly overwhelming to see the amount of positive, the amount of people that are just fed up with the status quo and just won't have it anymore and don't want to be in lines to receive grants or don't want to rely on the government to paint their house or to tar the road and that kind of thing. And I just building businesses around creating solutions. And at the end of the day, I think wherever the government is, and that's why who actually wins this election, almost, you know, I've actually stopped watching the news. I rather read emails from entrepreneurs with great ideas. That's how I like to go to sleep. You know, before I put the news on in the background and try and fall asleep, just wake up grumpy and angry and confused. You read three or four powerful requests for capital, and you spend the night dreaming about pitching to big capital allocators. So yeah, the last 6 months have been incredibly rewarding, and I'm amped. I'm ready to go. I want to go there. I want to bring big investors back. And it's not our big businesses. We're tired of big M&A deals. Now the BHPs and Anglos. That's been done. We've done it. Everyone's bored of it. We need to actually allocate the money into the economy for real. Let's give it to people to buy stoves and ovens and buckies and trucks and generators and tools and walk-in refrigerators. Those are the things we need to allocate our capital into, and that's what we're going to go there and ask for capital allocations to do. And we've built the mechanisms. Between Gigi and I, we work very closely in solving these problems. We know where the golden nuggets are, and we know how to get the cash. We know how to go and extract it. And I finally have a set of data that I can prove the hypothesis I've been talking about for the last 2 years. We've got the systems in place. We've got the governance in place. And we've now got verifiable, audited evidence that we've been talking the truth all along.
That's a good story. And we are really looking forward to having the two of you address the community in London. But Gigi, I guess one of the big questions that will come for South Africans who are sitting over the water, because they're still South Africans, even if they've been there 20 years, is why not come home? Are you going to be giving any, or if you asked that question, how would you respond?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that I guess my starting point is, anyone who's still wanting to leave and hasn't looked around and realized how much positive, how many positive things there are, is making a mistake. And so those who have already left, I mean, I think that there's huge opportunities. And I think that the opportunities, to what Warren's talking about are in kind of entrepreneurial activity, and my day job is to advise companies, I mentioned Capitec as an example, on strategies and stuff for South African markets, both formal and informal. And everyone who looks at it, all those companies go like, geez, it's incredible, the opportunities. Those who get it right, kind of, it really is powerful. And this talks to the massive opportunities. If you've got any entrepreneurial skill and you looked at South Africa outside of just your narrow little higher middle class space and look broader at the economy, even rural towns are booming. And the storyline is rural towns are dying. Rural towns like Pongola and Burgersfort are doing incredibly well. And the people who are putting shopping centers there are doing incredibly well, and so on. And so I guess my thing to, is like, why aren't you coming back and investing in setting up whatever entrepreneurial venture, but not where you would have had it in Sandton and Menlyn, but in Pongola or Burgersfort or Mlazi and so on. And that's really where the opportunities lie. I think the other thing is that, people go, everything's going to be incredible. We're going to have a revolution because everyone's unemployed and people are dying of hunger, which of course is not true. And that is another kind of factor, is that actually this sector has managed to generate incomes and build people homes and spend on, beer at their local tavern, which now has a flat screen TV and Wi-Fi. And so people are actually very happy where they are. We're not on the verge of some form of revolution and suffering and so on. We actually have a very sound lower middle class township, rural, whatever you want to call it, population. And that's not to say that there aren't problems, but the problems are actually smaller than we realize. And actually what we need is more people investing and saying, how do we fix the problems? And how do we get the people like Warren's talking about, who've gone out there and said, no matter what, I'm going to build this business, and generally have built it with no formal funding, borrowed from family, cashed in a pension, whatever it might be. I was actually with a baker. Sorry, just as an aside, I was with a baker in Soweto a week ago, and we were chatting because I run a program with Supreme Flour, work a loyalty program with township bakers. I said, oh, when did you start? Because he's got a really cool bakery, does very well. No. He said, I was the UNISA librarian, and I decided I would cash in my pension and start the bakery. And now he's opened a second bakery, which his wife runs down the road. And he does a couple of, you know, almost 1,000 or more loaves of bread a day and rolls and so on and so forth. Now, imagine if that guy could, you know, I said, and now the second one, how did you start that? He said, oh, he laughed. He said, I took a little bit more out of my pension. Imagine that guy, and he could get some support and didn't have to rely on his pension. And he had someone coming out and helping set up a whole bakery support franchise or whatever it might be. You know, again, there's these huge opportunities, and they just need help. I talk a lot about, you know, we need scale-ups, not startups. There are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of businesses out there. We don't need to start new ones. We just have to help the ones that are there to scale up. And what are the opportunities for anyone outside of South Africa who's quite happy to invest in entrepreneurial ventures, you know, where they are, and has never thought, wow, maybe there's entrepreneurial ventures in South Africa I could invest in as well.
And it's an area that they know better than probably anywhere else in the world. Sorry,
the sun shines longer as well.
That's why solar is doing so well, as we'll hear from Andrew as well. But it's a wonderful story. I'm hoping that the your travels to the UK are safe and peaceful, and look forward to seeing you on that side of the pond pretty soon. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews, and you've been hearing Gigi Alcock and Warren Wheatley telling us more about the power of human potential.